Hello, it's Saturday, December 29th, 2007, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. Judging by the way the media is treating the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, I would conclude that the Zionists were involved with her murder. One reason is because the Zionists didn't wait for an investigation. On the day that she was killed, the 27th, they immediately began telling us that it was an attack by Al-Qaeda. Furthermore, the Zionists don't want the people in Pakistan to remain calm. Instead, they're trying to incite violence. And the news reports that we get in America and Europe are even more suspicious. On the 28th, there were lots of reports that riots were breaking out and the nation was on the verge of self-destruction. And what's even more suspicious are the reports that suggest that terrorists will somehow get access to Pakistan's nuclear bombs. A report from Reuters has the remark, "Security experts fear Pakistan's nuclear materials could fall into the hands of Islamic militants." This morning, the 29th, there are even more of these reports, and they're even more ridiculous. A British news report has the headline, "Who is in control of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal?" Imagine if, after President Kennedy had been assassinated, the Zionists had produced news reports with such headlines as, "Who is in control of America's nuclear arsenal?" Or, "Security experts fear that America's nuclear material could fall into the hands of terrorists." Another reason I think the Zionists are involved with Bhutto's murder is because, as soon as it happened, lots of idiotic messages started to appear on the internet message boards to confuse the issue by suggesting that maybe the Bush administration was responsible for the murder, or maybe the neocons killed her, or maybe she was killed by the president of Pakistan, or maybe she was working for the CIA. This is exactly what they do with 9/11, the Apollo moon landing hoax, and other crimes. They saturate the internet with thousands of slightly different theories so that when people look on the internet for more information, they're confused or overwhelmed. Bhutto's family is also suspicious, and so is the creation of Pakistan. Her grandfather was somehow involved with the creation of Pakistan in 1947, so he may have had connections to Zionists in the British government. And her father was an official in the government of Pakistan. In 1967, he started the Pakistan People's Party, which promoted democracy and socialism. He was elected president of Pakistan in 1971, and he started their nuclear weapons program in 1972. He disregarded Henry Kissinger's threat to stop the development of nuclear weapons, so we ought to wonder if Kissinger and his friends were involved with his murder in 1979. Benazir Bhutto is also extremely suspicious. She was elected prime minister of Pakistan twice and removed both times on charges of corruption. She moved out of Pakistan in 1998. Then, 2 months ago, the Pakistan government decided to give her amnesty and remove all charges of corruption. That allowed her to return to Pakistan and enter the election so that she could run against the government that just gave her amnesty. Does that make sense to you? It looks like she and the Pakistan government had been tricked by the Zionists. Hopefully, the Pakistan government won't be tricked into allowing this assassination to escalate into a war. The Zionists still have almost total control of the media, and they still routinely outsmart governments and people all over the world. And I suspect that they were responsible for the mysterious shooting at the shopping center in Omaha, Nebraska, and those mysterious fires in California, and the mysterious fires in Greece, and the demolition of the levees in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina passed through. As you contemplate these events, it's easy to come to the conclusion that Zionists are doing whatever they please, and that we're having no effect on them. However, as strange as it may seem, there are reasons to believe that the Zionists are running into some very serious resistance today. A simple example is that they've been trying for years to convince America to bomb Iran, and they're still failing at it. And their failures to protect themselves from exposure on the internet. There are more people today who are aware of Zionism than there were last year. And unless they can stop us, there'll be more people next year who are aware of them. It's also interesting to consider why government officials in different nations have been predicting a very big 9/11 type of attack ever since 2002. Remember years ago when we were told that there would be a big attack at Christmas or during a sports event or on New Year's Eve? And this year, Michael Chertoff predicted a big attack in the summer of 2007. Why would they make so many predictions that never come true? If they're trying to frighten us, it's not working. Their failed predictions make them appear incompetent or paranoid. You might wonder if the reason they haven't done another big attack is because they're afraid that millions of us won't fall for the trick. But they weren't afraid to do 9/11, so if they're afraid now, that means we're beating them. However, I don't think they're afraid to attack us, and I don't think they're making predictions simply to frighten us. I think they've been trying to stage a big attack, but their attempts have been failures because there's too many people who are wise to their tricks, and there may be people who are secretly sabotaging them. Although it's impossible to know what they're doing, judging by the remarks and behavior of Michael Chertoff, Alex Jones, and other people, I was expecting a major attack on August 28th. And then, later, we discovered that 6 nuclear missiles were accidentally flown across the country on August 30th. As I mentioned in one of my other audio files, I doubt that that was an accident. I suspect that they were planning to use those nuclear bombs for another 9/11 attack, but they failed. It also seems like they tried to stage some type of attack or perhaps ruin the economy in September and again in October and in November, and I was even more certain of an attack for the morning of December 14. But nothing happened. Perhaps I'm making ridiculous assumptions. Perhaps the reason there hasn't been a big attack yet is simply because they weren't ready until now. Perhaps this assassination in Pakistan is the first step in their next big attack. Their next step might be to create so much chaos in Pakistan that they can claim that Al-Qaeda has stolen some nuclear bombs. Then lots of nuclear bombs could explode at the Pentagon and at the governments of Europe. And that would create so much chaos that the Zionists might be able to start killing those of us who caused trouble for them, and then they could get total control of Europe and America. Unfortunately, it's not easy for us to figure out if we're having an effect on the Zionists. For example, if Pakistan calms down during the next few weeks and the world returns to normal, we won't know if it's because the Zionists failed with their plan to attack us with nuclear bombs, or if it's because they never had any such plan. However, I think they've been trying and failing to conduct a large-scale attack. The reason I say this is because I'm sure they would agree with me that they're going to lose unless they can create tremendous chaos. They have control of us right now, but they're being exposed all over the world, and they're not going to save themselves by lighting fires or shooting people in a shopping mall or assassinating a few people. They've got to create chaos on such a large scale that they can start arresting or killing those of us who are exposing and resisting them. They're not just facing a few thousand enemies today. There must be millions of us around the world, and we're growing every month. If all they do are little attacks, they're not going to stop us, which means that we're going to continue exposing them, and eventually there'll be enough of us to destroy them. No matter how I look at the past few years, it seems to me that we're slowly defeating this crime network. I don't see how they can save themselves without creating large-scale chaos and then killing us during the chaos. I think they're in a very desperate situation, which would explain why they're pushing so hard to convince us that Pakistan is about to self-destruct and that Al-Qaeda will steal nuclear bombs. The Zionists are also trying to make us fear and hate Pakistan. Did you know that the latest version of the Loose Change video emphasizes a Pakistan connection to the 9/11 attack? The Zionists have been trying for years to set Pakistan up as one of the nations involved in the 9/11 attack. But even if they get a war started, that doesn't mean we can't turn it around. So don't get worried. And whatever you do, don't relax yet. We must continue exposing them, especially now that they're trying to create violence in Pakistan. Another sign that the Zionists are in trouble is the recent news report from Israel that shows a third of the young Israelis want to leave Israel. An organization is in big trouble when its members start losing interest. Did you see that report? By the way, I'm now sending out email messages almost every day about new items on my site, so if you sign up for the messages, then you won't have to check my site for changes. The point I'm trying to make here is that even though the Zionists are still in control, the evidence suggests that they're in serious trouble, and it's going to get worse for them every month. If this continues, they will soon become so vulnerable that we'll be able to deal with a question that none of the other truth seekers want to talk about. Namely, what are we going to do with the people in the Zionist network? And what should we do with Israel? What should we do with the dishonest truth seekers, such as the scholars for 9/11 Truth, and Jeff Rentz, and Alex Jones? What should we do with the thousands of people in the mysterious institutions, such as the Tavistock Institute and the Heritage Foundation? And what should we do with all the government officials who've been working for the Zionists? In my audio file for December 10th, I played an excerpt of Daryl Smith in which he said, "We're not going to be the monsters that we're fighting." Years ago, that remark would have meant nothing to me because I assumed that the Zionists were just like the Aztecs, the Vikings, the French, and the Irish. All groups of people have been fighting with their neighbors over territory. I assumed the Zionists were the same. But now that I know what these Zionists have been doing to us, I can see why they worry that we will treat them in the manner that they treat us. Imagine keeping Madeleine Albright as a sex slave in your basement. Or how about using Joe Lieberman's children in a blood sacrifice? And I haven't heard from Christopher Bolin for a long time. Imagine keeping Alex Jones and his family as prisoners and forcing them to pretend that they're free. Or imagine sending Congressman Barney Frank to parties so that people could rape him. Or how about killing all of the intelligent Jews and leaving the stupid ones behind to serve as a source of labor and sex? Now that I know more about these Zionists, I can understand why Smith and the others are worried that we might treat them in the manner that they treat us. So, what are we going to do with these criminals? Should they all be executed? Should they be put into jail? Should we force them to spend their lives doing something productive for us? Should we sterilize them and send them into exile so that they can finish their lives without bothering us? Should we send the Israelis to Khazaria and let Russia deal with them? This may seem like a simple issue to resolve, but I'm sure it's going to bring up discussions about who is a criminal and who is a victim. Some of the people who have been assisting the Zionist crime network seem to be doing so only because they were tricked or threatened, not because they wanted to help them. If you're older than 50 years of age, it should be easy for you to understand how people could be tricked. During the 1950s and 1960s, the Zionists were saturating us with propaganda that the Russians were going to attack us with nuclear bombs. Some people became so frightened that they built fallout shelters. I still have faint memories of my elementary school running some type of exercise to train us on what to do in case the Russians attacked. The school would set off an alarm, and then we would climb under our desks. We were also saturated with propaganda that communists were going to take over the world. When I was a teenager, I believed the propaganda that the Americans got involved with the Vietnam War in order to protect the Vietnamese. Something seemed strange about the manner in which the Vietnam War was being fought, but I assumed that the war had been corrupted by selfish businessmen who were using the war to make money, and I assumed that the people who became top military leaders were people who enjoyed war and considered it as a game. I can understand why people in that era, especially the younger ones, assisted with the war. However, those people could be described as victims of Zionism, even though they caused a lot of suffering for America and Vietnam. The situation becomes even more complicated when you listen to what Kay Griggs says about the military. She says the Zionists routinely abuse and manipulate children in order to turn them into a type of slave who can be controlled through bribery, blackmail, and threats. She also says that the Zionists pressure some military personnel into doing embarrassing or illegal activities in order to blackmail them. These people could also be described as victims, even though they may have assisted the crime network. I can also understand how people could be tricked into assisting with the Apollo moon landing hoax. The Zionists may have told people that NASA needs a few more years before they can put men on the moon, and in the meantime, they will fake a moon landing in order to make America look so technically advanced that the Russians are afraid to attack us. The Zionists could reassure people that NASA will put men on the moon by 1980, and then everybody would laugh at how they fooled the Russians. The Americans who fell for this trick would have assisted with a crime, but they could be described as victims rather than as criminals. Some of the people who assist the mysterious organizations that we refer to as think tanks could also be victims. There seem to be hundreds of these organizations, such as the Hudson Institute, the Brookings Institution, and the Rand Corporation, the Milken Institute, and the New Democrat Network. There must be thousands of people worldwide who support these organizations, and some of these people are probably naive citizens who assume that they're assisting a legitimate organization. A few months ago, I was talking to a man who was donating money on a routine basis to the Ludwig von Mises Institute. About 2 years ago, he stopped giving them money because it occurred to him that the organization never accomplishes anything. He didn't know much about Zionism, so he didn't think of them as a Zionist organization. Instead, he simply decided that they were incompetent. I advocate that we destroy every one of these organizations, and we should assume that all of their members are Zionist agents until proven innocent. To understand my reasoning, imagine that you decide to buy a farm and raise some sheep. A real estate agent takes you to a farm that's for sale, and you look closely at one of the sheep and notice that it's actually a wolf in sheep's clothing. You look closely at a sheep that's lying on the ground and discover that it's dead. You look at another sheep and discover it's another wolf. How many sheep would you have to look at before you decided you don't want that particular farm? I don't have time to investigate all of the mysterious organizations, but every time I look at one, I find connections to Zionism or Israel or the banking families or the Rockefellers. We would be fools to assume that any of them are honest. Some of the organizations appear to be groups of religious fanatics. For example, the Discovery Institute, which is the primary group promoting the concept of intelligent design. In case you don't know what intelligent design is, it's a form of creationism that's designed to circumvent the law in America. Our public schools are not supposed to promote any religion. And since creationism is based on the Bible, it's considered to be the theory of a particular religion, and therefore creationism is not allowed in public schools. Some devious religious people are trying to circumvent the law by removing references to the Bible and telling us that intelligent design is a scientific theory, not a biblical theory. I suppose if they get away with this trick, they'll rewrite the Bible to remove all references to religion and refer to it as the biography of Jesus Christ. The Discovery Institute appears to be just another group of dishonest and diabolical religious fanatics, but it was originally part of the Hudson Institute, and that group was created by people from the Rand Corporation. So for all we know, the Discovery Institute is just another group of dishonest and diabolical Zionists. This would make the most sense since the Zionists are the people who repeatedly exhibit this diabolical behavior. We would be fools to take the chance that any of these mysterious organizations are honest. And even if some of them are honest, none of them are actually doing something useful for us, so we should eliminate all of them simply on the grounds of incompetence. We should shut down all of the charities for the same reason. Some of these charities may be under the supervision of honest people, but all of them are incompetent. The charities are based on principles that don't make sense. For example, we're not going to stop starvation simply by giving bags of rice to hungry people. The charities that give toys to orphans and poor children during Christmas are especially ridiculous. We don't improve the life of an orphan by giving him a toy. It's foolish to allow these charities to continue. They've been trying to stop starvation, poverty, and other problems for decades, but they haven't accomplished anything yet. All of them are based on the idiotic theory that we can solve problems by feeling sorry for people. Some of these charities may be Zionist organizations, but some charities may be groups of honest people who just don't have the ability to understand that they're not doing anything of value. All of them should be shut down and investigated. There's also a lot of mysterious organizations connected to the United Nations, the European Union, and our governments. For example, there's the Nexus Institute, which has such partners as the German Marshall Fund of the United States. And consider the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which has a budget of 168 million euro for 2007. What has this organization accomplished with all that money? Then there is the European Parliament. This is a very large organization, but what is it doing to help Europe? One of their web pages shows 120 members in the Climate Change Committee. What is a Climate Change Committee doing for Europe? All of these organizations should be shut down, and everybody involved with them should be investigated. These organizations are intangible entities, so destroying them doesn't hurt anything. So let's assume that we investigate everybody and we make a determination of who deserves to be referred to as a criminal. What are we supposed to do with the criminals? Many people have been advocating that we arrest the criminals and put them in jail, but they assumed that there were only a few hundred criminals, or at most, a few thousand. However, the internet is allowing us to discover that the Zionist crime network is larger than we had ever imagined. For example, a few years ago, most of us didn't know about the Armenian Genocide of 1915, or the bombing of the King David Hotel in 1946, or that the Zionists were manipulating the Nazis, or that the Zionists were lying to us about the Holocaust. The internet is removing the secrecy that has been protecting the Zionists, and so today we're discovering that this network is much larger than other crime gangs, and that they have been committing a lot more crimes than we had ever imagined. There is even evidence that the ancestors of the Zionists were responsible for the Crusades of the Middle Ages. Even the most generous among us might decide that there's more than 100,000 people who should be classified as Zionist criminals, and some of us may want to classify millions of people as criminals. What are we going to do with so many criminals? A more important question that we should start discussing is, who among us is going to make a decision on what to do with the criminals? The reason this issue is so important is that we have to be careful to keep the Zionist infiltrators out. The Zionists are going to try to protect their friends within the network, and they're going to try shifting the blame to the people they're willing to sacrifice. Look at what happened with the Knights Templar in the 1300s. A few of them were killed, and most people assumed that the network was destroyed. But most of the people in the network survived, and it appears that many of them, maybe most of them, continued their operations in secrecy. The network was not destroyed. In 1776, Adam Weishaupt created the Illuminati organization, and less than 10 years later, the government thought they had gotten rid of it by banning it. But did they really get rid of it? Or did some of the members simply continue to operate in secrecy? Are we ever going to learn from the mistakes of our ancestors? We don't get rid of organized crime networks by arresting a few members or passing a law to forbid their organization. Every Zionist criminal has to be dealt with. This requires that we prevent Zionist infiltrators from protecting their friends in the network. So, how do we keep out the Zionist infiltrators? The only way we can protect ourselves is to investigate everybody who wants to be involved with the decision of who is a criminal and what we should do with the criminals. There are lots of people struggling right now to give themselves the reputation of a truth seeker, such as the scholars for 9/11 truth, the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, Alex Jones, Dylan Avery, Webster Tarpley, and Daryl Smith. Nobody should get a free ticket to the trial of Zionism simply because they made a video about 9/11. Nobody should get a free ride. Everybody, without exception, must be investigated for Zionist connections. I don't care if you investigate me, so why should anybody else care if we look to see if they have connections to Zionism? Another suggestion I have is that we refuse to allow the public to get involved in these decisions. There are two reasons for this. One is that most people have proven themselves to be incredibly selfish, incompetent, and incapable of facing reality. The majority of people want to play like children, not deal with problems. They're still ignoring our attempts to expose 9/11 and Zionism, and many of them are still ridiculing us. A lot of people appear to be intelligent, but they're suffering from some type of mental disorder that interferes with their ability to see something as obvious as a demolition of Building 7. People with such lousy minds are not going to add anything of value to the discussion of what to do with Zionism. The second reason we should not allow the public to get involved is because they have proven themselves to be easily manipulated. If we allow the public to get involved, then the Zionists would be able to influence the decisions simply by influencing the public. We would be in the same idiotic situation that we're in right now. We would have to put up with the Zionist propaganda from Hollywood stars, from websites, and from Nobel Prize winners. We should learn from 9/11 and face the fact that the majority of people are mental nitwits. We have to tell the majority of people to keep their mouths shut. Furthermore, making a decision on what to do with the criminals is the easy work. The more difficult job is figuring out how to fix our nations. The Zionists have done a tremendous amount of damage to the world, so after we get rid of them, we have a big mess to clean up. They've ruined our school system, they've filled our history books with propaganda, they've encouraged women to rebel against men, they've been instigating racial fights, and they've been infiltrating and manipulating religions. Furthermore, some of our problems have nothing to do with Zionism or crime. One problem that's starting to hurt all nations right now, especially America, is that technology is making it increasingly difficult for people to find jobs. To understand this, consider how the economy has changed over the past two centuries. In 1800, most men were self-employed farmers, and most women worked at home. The farming techniques in that era were so simple that none of the farmers needed much of an education or intelligence. Their job was mostly physical labor. A boy could learn how to become a farmer just by watching his father. There weren't many businesses in 1800, and most of the jobs in that era were so simple that people could learn the job while they were working. Some jobs didn't even require people to know how to read or do arithmetic. It doesn't take much intelligence to see what's happening. Technology is replacing people who are doing those simple jobs. This trend is going to continue. Industrial robots are becoming more advanced, and Japan is experimenting with robots that can walk and avoid obstacles. When these robots become more advanced, they'll replace a lot of people who currently have jobs. Will those people be able to find another job? Or will they end up doing some useless government work? These robots will be able to replace people that you probably never thought could be replaced. For example, they can replace musicians. Have you seen the video of the robot that plays musical instruments? These robots make a player piano seem primitive. There's not much of an interest in player piano, so you may assume that there won't be much of an interest in musical robots. But the player piano is very limited, whereas these robots have incredible versatility. robots have a tremendous advantage over human musicians because they never get tired, they're available 24 hours a day, they can play all types of music, and they can play better than a human. Furthermore, robots can play music that humans don't have the ability to play, because robots can move more smoothly, more quickly, and more accurately. Musicians will be able to write music that only the robots can play. We could use these musical robots at weddings, restaurants, and parties. Unlike a CD player, when we're tired of listening to the musical robot, we can tell them to clean the floors or wash the windows. Robots could also clean tables at restaurants and carry dirty dishes into the kitchen. They could go into a warehouse to find shoes for us, and they could put shoes back if we decide we don't want them. Unlike a human sales clerk, they won't complain about us. And if we could get better governments and start designing better cities, robots could do even more jobs, such as cleaning the city and the public bathrooms, and picking up garbage, and separating garbage for recycling. Take a look at what's been happening over the past couple hundred years. It should be obvious that technology is taking away a lot of the jobs that people used to do. This brings up the very unpleasant issue of what are we going to do with all of the people who can't get a job. In America, most of the unemployed people get jobs in the government, the universities, insurance companies, investment companies, religions, charities, and the think tanks. Most of these people are parasites. However, not all of them want to be parasites. Some of them are forced into this situation because technology is reducing the number of jobs that they're capable of doing. Technology is making jobs increasingly difficult, and it's going to cause an increasingly larger percentage of the population to become unemployable and parasitic. This situation cannot continue forever. There's going to be a point at which it starts causing trouble for society. We can already see problems occurring, especially in America. There are companies all over America that can't find engineers, machinists, and other skilled workers. Their solution is to move their operation to some other country or bring foreigners into America to do the work. The Boeing Aircraft Company, for example, hired thousands of Russian engineers in Moscow. IBM is moving their operations to other nations. IBM is surviving by moving some of their operations to foreign nations. For example, last year IBM had 50,000 employees in India, and this year they have 73,000. About 20% of IBM employees are in India today. Some people complain that businesses are using foreigners only to save money, and there is certainly some truth to that accusation, but that's happening only on a small scale. Most businesses are truly having trouble finding people with the skills and the desire to do the jobs that are available today. At the beginning of November, I posted a link to a Kansas news report that was complaining that in the Wichita area alone, there were almost 9,000 jobs that couldn't be filled. When a retail store advertises a job for a sales clerk, hundreds of people will apply. But when a business offers a job for a machinist or a technician, it may not find anybody capable of doing the job, even though the job pays more than the sales clerk. Every year there are fewer people who can find a job. These unemployable people are getting into parasitic jobs, mainly in the government and the universities, and that causes tuition, taxes, insurance, and other expenses to rise every year. Eventually, there will be so many parasites that the nation starts to deteriorate. Some people hope that robots will eventually become so advanced that they'll do all of the work so that humans don't have to do anything. But how could we possibly develop such advanced robots? We would need a lot of very talented engineers, scientists, computer programmers, and other people to design such robots and the factories that produce them. But where are all those talented people? America doesn't even have enough talented people to develop a modern high-speed train. The engineering jobs are becoming so complex that some of the people who were productive engineers 100 years ago would be failures as engineers today. Most people can't understand that technology is causing people to become unemployable, so they make ridiculous assumptions about why businesses are having trouble finding employees. For example, some people in Russia and Japan assume that the problem is a low population, so they encourage women to have more babies. Did you see the news report from last year in which President Putin proposed financial incentives to encourage women to have babies? Or how about the news report that the Japanese are worried about their declining population? The situation is especially absurd in the case of Japan. Have you ever seen photographs of Japan? How could anybody believe that Japan is suffering from a shortage of people? No nation is suffering from a shortage of people. Every nation could easily survive a large decrease in population. Japan doesn't need 100 million people. They could live a very nice life with only 10 million, or even 1 million. The shortage of people is an illusion, but not an optical illusion. It's an emotional illusion. If you can control your emotions, you can easily understand the problem. For example, when a Hollywood director needs to hire somebody to act, dance, or sing, they have no problem finding people with the talent and desire to do the job. However, if you're looking for a skilled machinist, or a supervisor for an assembly line, or an engineer, you won't find hundreds of talented people applying for the job. Furthermore, most of the people who apply won't have the experience or ability to do the job properly anyway. There's no shortage of people in any nation. There's only a shortage of people with talent, skills, honesty, morality, intelligence, and a nice personality. It's very easy to understand this concept, but our emotions don't want to accept it. We find it unpleasant to face the possibility that the majority of people, including our own relatives and family members, don't have the ability to do the type of jobs that are available today. Technology is causing problems for us in another way. Specifically, it provides us with tremendous entertainment options, and every year more people find themselves overwhelmed with the options and unable to control themselves. Technology provides us with an enormous variety of foods, and every year more people have trouble controlling the quantity of food they eat. Some people have so much trouble resisting the industrial foods that are high in sugar and artificial flavors that they become sickly. Technology is also providing us with lots of different gambling options. We can gamble on sports events, and we can go to gambling casinos, and we can play government lotteries. Technology also provides us with a wide variety of alcoholic beverages and other drugs. And today we have lots of different forms of pornography. When robots become available, there will certainly be businesses offering them for use as sex. Nobody 5,000 years ago had a problem with gambling or alcohol or obesity, but look at how many people today have a problem. And every year, more people find themselves unable to cope with modern life. Some of the people who are doing fine today will have problems 10 years from now, or 20 years from now. For example, some of the people who can resist pornography today might find it impossible to resist sex robots, and some of them may end up ruining their lives by spending too much time and money with those robots. Each of us is slightly different, but each of us has limitations. Every year, more people reach their limitation and have trouble coping with the increasingly complex world. The majority of people are already beyond their limitations. They can't properly deal with modern life. Most people can't handle the responsibility of voting for government officials, for example. Some people have the intelligence to make good decisions about voting, but they don't have the desire to spend time researching the candidates and analyzing them. Other people have the desire to research the candidates, but they don't have the intelligence to make a good decision. The issue of abortion is another example. Only a fraction of the population has the desire to study this issue and the intelligence to develop a policy that is worth considering. Most people are such intellectual nitwits that they argue over whether abortion is right or wrong. They don't understand that these complex issues don't have a right or wrong. We need to propose policies and then discuss which ones we'd like to try. But most people can't propose a policy for abortion because they don't have the ability to develop such a policy. All they can do is argue over right or wrong. The majority of people should not get involved in the abortion issue. They have nothing to contribute. The people who claim that abortion is a woman's right are not making sense. What is a right? They don't know what a right is. And the people who condemn abortion as murder don't make sense either. As I mentioned in some of my documents, the people who argue over abortion never do any research into the issue of why so many women want abortions, or what we're going to do with all the unwanted babies if we prevent abortions. There's no research, and there's no discussions. The people only argue, just like stupid animals that fight over territory. The people who condemn abortion as murder bring up a very interesting issue. These people claim that they're so concerned about human life that they can't tolerate the killing of a fetus. And many of them also claim to be upset about the suffering of the fetus during the abortion. They create the impression that they have incredible concern for the life and happiness of other people. However, if these people were truly concerned about other people, why don't they care about what happens to the fetus after it's born? Have you heard of a man named Paul Benassi? He testified in court that he and other orphans were taken to parties and used for sex by such people as Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts. He also said that he was used to help kidnap other people's children, and that those children were used as sex slaves, and sometimes killed. If Paul Benassi's mother had tried to abort Paul, the anti-abortion people would have staged dramatic displays and condemned the abortion as murder. But they don't care that Paul ended up in an orphanage and was raped repeatedly by government officials. They also don't care that other children are being kidnapped and sold as sex slaves. Furthermore, most of the people who condemn abortion as murder are Republicans, and most of them support the war in Iraq. How can they be so traumatized by an abortion and yet treat the killing of Iraqis as family entertainment? And consider the anti-abortion people who show pictures of aborted fetuses to women who are considering an abortion. They do this to convince the women to give birth to their baby. But these people don't show pictures of the war in order to shock us into stopping the war. They want to save the life of a fetus, but after that fetus is born, they don't care if it's raped, killed, abandoned in an orphanage, or sold as a sex slave. My conclusion is the anti-abortion people don't really care about abortion. Their opposition to abortion is for their own entertainment. They want to feel special. In my articles at my philosophy page, I refer to this activity as mental masturbation. These people are stimulating their emotions, but not their sexual emotions. They're stimulating themselves so that they can feel special. Instead of using their hands to stimulate themselves, they're stimulating themselves with words such as, "I'm such a wonderful, loving person that I can't tolerate the abortion of a tiny fetus. I'm so special. Oh my, I'm so special. Oh, so special. Oh God, I'm so special. Oh my God." Not everybody who opposes abortion is trying to feel special. Some people oppose abortion because they realize that if abortion was a simple and legal procedure, their parents would have aborted them, or society would have demanded that they be aborted. Those people don't care about human life. They're just feeling sorry for themselves. This is just another type of mental masturbation in which the people stimulate their emotions. A lot of people have noticed that some of the most active anti-abortionists are men. Some women assume this is because men can't get pregnant, but I think it's because of the male personality. All male animals and humans want to be the dominant male. Men are constantly struggling to convince other people that we're special. We boast about our high income, or our college diplomas, or that we won a Nobel Prize, or that we traveled to some unusual place that most people have never been to. It's very difficult for men to face the fact that most of us are ordinary, and there's nothing special about most of us. Even those of us with special talents only have special talents in a few narrow areas. In other areas, we're average or below average. Unfortunately, we can't stand the thought that we're ordinary or below average. We're constantly looking for some opportunity to boast about ourselves. One of the simplest ways for a man to appear special is to condemn abortion. This doesn't require any skills, talent, or even preparation. All a man has to do is open his mouth and let the words come out. He can easily convince himself that he's somebody special. We consider it inappropriate to stimulate ourselves sexually in public, but we consider it proper behavior to stimulate other types of emotions in public. However, I think we need to change this attitude. I think we should stand up to the people who condemn abortion as murder by telling them to either say something intelligent about abortion or quit jerking themselves off. Tell them to masturbate in the privacy of their own home. Humans are just like animals. Males struggle to be dominant, and the females are sexually attractive to whoever the dominant male is, regardless of what a jerk he may be. Have you ever noticed how women will offer themselves to a man simply because he's famous or wealthy? Phil Spector has no trouble getting women, even though several women accuse him of murdering his wives. Women don't look for men who are responsible, or who contribute to society, or who have useful skills, or who are intelligent. Instead, they look for the dominant male. This crude behavior works fine for animals and primitive humans, but in our era, it's detrimental. Of course, I have more of these opinions on my philosophy page if you're interested. The majority of people may be wonderful humans, but they're out of place in this technically advanced world, and this situation is becoming worse as technology advances. The majority of people are like apes in a human world. They can't cope with this modern era. A couple years ago, I posted a document in which I tried to explain that the world is the way it is because the majority of people are making it this way. We can't blame the world's problems on a small minority of criminals, or even Jews. For example, some people complain that the Jews were the slave traders. And even though there's a lot of evidence for that theory, that doesn't explain why people purchased the slaves. Just because a Jew offers you a slave doesn't mean that you have to purchase it. Gambling is another good example. The Jews might be responsible for the gambling casinos in Las Vegas and Macau, China, but they can't make any of us go to their casinos and spend our money on gambling, prostitutes, drugs, or alcohol. Many people complain that the Jews control the media, but the Jews aren't forcing any of us to purchase their publications or go to their Hollywood movies. It's not accurate to say the Jews are responsible for the world's problems. It makes more sense to say that the world's problems are a combination of the people who don't fit in with this technically advanced era and the Jews who take advantage of these animal-like people. When you look at the world in this manner, then you'll realize that we can't improve the world until we deal with both groups of people. We have to deal with the animal-like people who don't fit in, and we have to deal with the people who take advantage of them. In that document I posted several years ago, I asked, "What if there was a planet in which everybody had a mind exactly like yours? Would the people on that planet have any interest in gambling casinos? Would some of the people try to use others as slaves? Would there be any interest in producing alcoholic beverages or other drugs? Would there be any need for security cameras or policemen? Would there be any math, science, or technology? Would you allow inheritances? Would the people enjoy one another, or would they be antisocial and lonely? The world is a reflection of the human race, and every nation is a reflection of its particular citizens. Every nation has a lot of corruption, crime, loneliness, gambling, prostitution, drugs, and other problems because the majority of people can't cope with the problems we face today, and organized crime gangs prey on these people. Our problems are not due to stupidity or ignorance. There are lots of educated and intelligent people who can't cope with life. Perhaps the best way to describe it is that some people are simply better adapted to this modern era. A good example is food. An enormous number of people have problems with food. Some of them eat too much because they can't control their cravings, and some eat too little because they're afraid of gaining weight, and some get sickly because they eat too much industrial foods. Some of these problems are due to ignorance and stupidity, but there are a lot of intelligent and educated people who have trouble with food. These people would have been fine if they had been born 10,000 years ago when food was always in short supply and when all of the food was natural and healthy, but they can't cope with the situation today. Most people also can't cope with material items, drugs, alcohol, jewelry, prostitution, slavery, television, or voting for government officials. One of the reasons our economy is so chaotic and corrupt is because most business executives also have trouble with life. Both male and female executives have trouble controlling their cravings for money, and most men can't control their cravings to be important. Businesses are supposed to compete with each other, and the competition is supposed to inspire people to do a good job. However, there aren't many people who are capable of competing. Most business executives are fighting with each other in an attempt to become rich and acquire more control over more people. And it doesn't make any difference how much money they acquire. They always need more. And no matter how big their house is, it's not big enough. And no matter how many employees they have control over, they never have enough to satisfy their cravings. These business executives are like primitive savages who can't stop fighting with each other. They're like fat people who can't stop stuffing food into their mouths. They're intelligent monkeys in a human world. These neurotic businessmen are turning our economy into a war zone. These businessmen are not stupid or ignorant. Rather, they have a mind that is designed for a primitive life of thousands of years ago. And like most of the population, they're out of place today. The inability of people to understand the complexity of modern life is allowing Zionist Jews to turn people into voluntary slaves. An example is the Butterfly Project. The Zionists created this program for schools. The children are told to create butterflies out of paper or other material, and each butterfly is supposed to represent a dead Jewish child who was killed by the Nazis during the Holocaust. The purpose of the program is to convince the Goy children that millions of Jews were killed by the Nazis, and it stimulates the emotions of the Goy children so that they feel sadness for the dead Jewish children. Most people can understand the concept of slavery, but they can't understand that the Butterfly Project is a diabolical program to turn people into voluntary slaves. We arrest people for slavery today, but nobody is arrested for promoting the Butterfly Project. What's the difference between forcing a person to be a slave and manipulating him through propaganda into becoming a voluntary slave? The difference is that most people don't have the intellectual capacity to understand the concept of voluntary slavery, except in very obvious situations. For example, if a man offers candy to a child in return for letting him have sex, most people would complain that the man is committing a crime, even though the child may defend the man and insist that he wanted to have sex. However, when a Hollywood producer offers an adult a job in a movie in return for sex, nobody would consider the Hollywood producer to be committing a crime. For another example, when a salesman tricks an old man into donating money or buying products he doesn't want, almost everybody considers it to be a crime, even though the old man voluntarily gave the money. But when people are tricked into giving money to the Mormon Church or Scientology, almost nobody considers it to be a crime. Most people don't have the intelligence to understand that this behavior is abusive and detrimental to society. It ruins human relationships. It might help you to understand how destructive this behavior is if you imagine everybody doing it every day. Imagine asking a sales clerk a question, or asking your teenage son to help you move some furniture, and they respond that they'll do what you want and answer your questions after you perform oral sex on them. A lot of the abuse is too subtle for most people to understand. For example, consider the television shows that play phony laughter after somebody makes a joke. The phony laughter is intended to stimulate the people watching television. But is this abusive? Most people don't think so. But imagine everybody behaving like this. Imagine everybody carrying around an audio player, and every time they make a joke, they turn on the player to create laughter. The Butterfly Project is an abusive, disgusting program to turn people into voluntary slaves. The Zionists are behaving like that amazing parasite that gets into a snail's body and takes control of its mind. Have you seen the video of that parasite? I'll put a link to that video in the file that has this audio. I suppose there are Jews who will defend this practice on the grounds that we treat animals in the same manner. For example, there are people who force horses to become accustomed to wearing saddles and allowing people to ride them. And then we use those horses as slaves to entertain us. Are we abusing those horses? Should we let horses live in their natural condition? If it's acceptable to use an animal as a slave, why not also permit the use of stupid humans? When the Israelis trick the dumb Americans into attacking Iraqis, is that wrong? Or is that equivalent to putting a saddle on a horse and taking a ride around a park? The Zionist Jews who control the diamond industry have trained almost every woman into believing that diamonds are a girl's best friend. Is it wrong for the Zionist Jews to use women in this manner? Or should we consider it similar to training a circus seal to jump through a hoop? I wouldn't say this is an issue of right or wrong. I would say we have to make a decision on what type of world we want to live in. Do you want to live in a world in which a portion of the human population is using other people as animals? Do you want to live in a world in which some of us are masters and some of us are slaves? A lot of people expect technology to solve our problems, but technology is the reason we have these problems, and advances in technology are making the situation worse for us. Technology provides us with physical comforts, but it adds complexity to modern life. Furthermore, technology allows people to cause tremendous amounts of suffering. In 10,000 BC, for example, an individual couldn't cause much damage to the world. But today, an individual can easily kill dozens of people with poisons and guns, and groups of criminals can instigate wars or conduct big false flag operations, such as 9/11. Technology is not going to save us from our problems. Technology is actually going to make our problems worse. Consider the issue of euthanasia. Thousands of years ago, this issue was of no significance because people rarely became so old or injured or sickly that they wanted somebody to put them out of their misery. Today, we can keep people alive for so long that many people wish they would die rather than continue with their slow and painful death. Today, we have to deal with the issue of euthanasia, but most people can't discuss this issue. Most people's reaction to this issue is to ignore it, or hope that new technology will solve it. But technology will not solve this problem. Instead, advances in technology will make this problem worse. Nobody thousands of years ago was laying in a hospital bed and wishing they would die. Today there may be thousands of people around the world wishing they would die. Next year there will be more of these people, and the year after that there will be even more of them. Technology is making this situation worse every year. But the majority of people refuse to deal with this problem. Most people can't discuss the issue of euthanasia in a serious manner. Instead, they boast about how they're so special that they can't allow euthanasia under any circumstance because that would be murder. These people are not discussing the issue. What they're doing is using the issue to jerk themselves off. They're masturbating over this issue. They're stimulating themselves into thinking they're special. We're not going to solve our problems by people who jerk themselves off in public. We need people who can learn about the issues, discuss them, and experiment with different policies. We also need people who can deal with the illusion that we have a shortage of people. This problem is also going to get worse as technology improves. The jobs 10 years from now are going to be even more demanding, and the jobs 10 years after that will require even more intelligence and skills. America will continue to lose manufacturing jobs to the nations that have better quality businessmen and a more skilled labor force. A few decades ago, America was one of the world's biggest producers of trains, but nobody wants American trains today. A couple days ago, China announced the production of much more advanced trains that travel 300 kilometers per hour. IBM developed the micro hard disk many years ago, but it didn't have enough people to do something with that project. Today, Hitachi and Samsung are producing millions of them, and they've reduced them in size and increased their capacity. Hitachi has one model of micro drive that's the size of a compact flash card, and it holds 6 gigabytes. I'll put some links to the photos and information about them. This brings me to the final issue I want to mention. After we get rid of Zionism, we still have a lot of problems to deal with. We have to start dealing with the fact that technology is changing life for humans, and most of the people today cannot deal with this technically advanced era. We have to deal with this illusion that there is a shortage of people, and we have to deal with the people who can't cope with gambling, alcohol, money, food, and material items. We have a lot of work to do, but we can deal with it. Or at least some of us can. Well, that's my talk for today. Until the next time, bye.